This is Outspoken, the podcast that's not afraid to say exactly what you're thinking.
Our names are Amy, Kate and Sophie Torber. We're identical triplets, but we often don't have identical opinions. So sometimes things can get heated.
Outspoken covers all things reality TV, influencers, entertainment and issues facing women.
That is so fetch.
Thank you.
Hello and welcome back to Outspoken. Now, we've got our cups of tea at the ready, don't we, Amy?
Yes, we've got one very naughty dog that was brought over to the podcast recording.
We're trying to unwind and ignore that with our cup of tea because we are about to answer some quick fire pop culture questions.
We are. So thank you for everyone that sent questions in. We've chosen six questions to answer. So, Sophie, can you start us off with the first one?
Well, this has been one that's been very much requested. It's about Lily Brown hiding her new boyfriend.
Sorry, that sounds really sinister. She's not like hiding him out in a cave or anything. She literally hasn't posted a photo of him on Instagram on her YouTube.
But that's a cardinal sin as a YouTuber. Now,
yeah.
Now, before we get into it, let's give a bit of background as to who Lily Brown actually is. Now, she is a YouTuber and we first met her on Michael Finch's channel back in 2018.
Yeah, so that's right. So Lily came on the scene as one of Michael Finch's friends. And I think what people loved was it didn't really seem like she was trying to get anything from Michael, which is kind of ironic because he set up her influencer career for her.
Well, yeah, you say that, but I feel like now she's known as a bit of a social climber because soon after that, she joined this core friendship group, which was, of course, Michael Finch, Shani Grimmond, Rani, Sky Wheatley, and they all did vlogging trips in America together. So it was kind of evident that maybe she was using him somewhat.
I don't know. That's debatable. There's a lot of talk about whether the fact she and Michael are still friends. So it would be interesting to hear whether Michael feels like maybe he was used in a way to catapult her influencer career. We'll never know.
Now, her ex-boyfriend is another influencer called Jerome, and he actually previously dated influencer Ashton Wood. And it was quite controversial because he started his relationship with Lily quite soon after. So there were rumors that he did, in fact, cheat on the previous girlfriend with Lily. So wow. Things didn't really get off on a good start with the pair.
Now, so I'm assuming he sort of became Insta famous after dating Ashton because she is a huge influencer.
Yeah, well, he has 23.2 thousand followers at the moment. Now, I had a bit of a look on Social Blade, which is a way to track engagement and following. And it really surprised me because in the past month, he's actually gained 330 followers, which surprised me because now that he's no longer really relevant in being her boyfriend, I thought that he would follow the same track as others and
That's
lose
not
followers.
That many.
It's not that many, but I was expecting to see a huge drop. You know, when you look in your feed and you're like, who is this? Like, why am I still following this person?
Mm.
I kind of got that sort of vibe off him.
Yeah, well, that's true. I mean, we have spoken in the past how Shani Grimmond's ex, Jonathan, how his following has dramatically decreased since the pair stopped dating. So I suppose that is kind of surprising that he is still getting new followers.
That's right. So just for background, her whole life started to change when she started dating Jerome. Quickly, she began talking about moving out of her family home to the Gold Coast to be with him. And there was a dramatic change in her vlogs as well. I have to say, they were kind of crap to begin with, but they got even worse when she started dating Jerome.
I don't know. I actually think after she broke up with Jerome, that's when they started going downhill. Because I don't know, I feel like a lot of people like to have a little look into people's lives. And especially when they've got partners, there's some strange element that everyone seems to love.
Yeah, you do have a point. I just don't really find him as a main character per se, as like a Kurt.
Yeah, and I suppose this is maybe why she is keeping the new boyfriend very much off social media. I know he was in a recent vlog where she went and got her lips dissolved. He wasn't actually on camera, but he was behind the camera, so you could hear his voice, and they did sound quite sweet together. But it's not surprising that some influencers are being quite protective of their personal life, in that how does Lily know that guy might not just be using her to get followers?
Yeah, I completely agree. I think it's quite clever of her not to include him yet in her YouTube and her Instagram.
Yeah, it's clever of her as a personal decision, as in her personal life. Probably not a clever decision because everyone wants to know about him. So if she was to put up a boyfriend tag, you know, on YouTube, a lot of people would watch it. So as an influencer, it's not a great career move, but as a person, it's probably a good personal move for her.
But I kind of think almost, as you say, on a personal level, for these influencers who then put their boyfriends out there, who then become quite aspirational guys, their DMs probably fill up by women who then want to gain clout and attention from them as well. So
yeah.
Maybe there's a bit of insecurity there because it seems like it is something that is relatively new.
Well, she's probably protecting her mental health as well because she probably doesn't want to be, you know, message by hundreds of women saying, oh, I know I'm sleeping with your boyfriend. Because there's a lot of that that actually goes on.
Mm.
I mean, look at the popularity that UK vlogger Saffron Barker, her new boyfriend's getting. He went from having, I think, around maybe 2,000 followers on Instagram. He's now got close to 200,000 and he's featured across all her videos, which I'm loving. I mean, imagine if they broke up. You wouldn't like to admit it, but you would feel quite mad that this person had literally been able to start a new career as an influencer based off, I suppose, the clout of being your partner.
Particularly because those circles are quite small and everyone seems to know each other. So then it would be awkward to go to events where they might perhaps be invited. And yeah, it definitely does seem to get quite messy and when these relationships break up.
Yeah, and let's be honest, if you had a bad breakup, you would not want to see them gaining off your popularity, which is a lot of the time what we see when these influencers do break up. I mean, look at Jonathan Sauer. I mean, he's been able to start his social media career based off the fact he was Shani Grumman's boyfriend, and good on him for doing that. But it would kind of be, you'd feel a bit weird because he was first an accountant and now he's doing all this modeling work.
Mm.
As Shani, you'd be a bit like, I don't want to see his face around.
I think as well, there then also becomes the tendency where the couples become so popular themselves that then it becomes a joint YouTube channel like Chloe and Mitch. So, I mean,
they've had a baby, so let's hope they're staying together.
Yeah, exactly. But I more feel like it is a real branding exercise to introduce your boyfriend onto the scene. So you've got to make sure that that relationship is stable. As you say, stable to withgo all of the scrutiny and probably girls sliding into the DM. So I am interested to eventually meet Lily's boyfriend. I think it will be interesting to hear who he is, how long they've been dating for. I'm dying to know lots more about him, but I do think it's the right decision at the moment.
Well, do you know what? It could be a really good PR exercise on her behalf because everyone's talking about it. Everyone wants to know who he is. So when she does ultimately share a video with the two of them together, it's going to get a lot of likes and a lot of views. Now, the next question we have is, what was our take on the Paris Hilton doco?
I absolutely loved it. I was so excited when I saw the preview and I couldn't wait to check it out on YouTube. I also love the fact it was released on YouTube. I think that's a really interesting element to the documentary as well. But I suppose because we grew up, well, our teenage years were during the early 2000s, I love to revisit old celebrities from that time to analyze how much they have changed and our idea of celebrity has changed.
Well, I must say, Paris Hilton was looking bloody amazing for 39.
I couldn't believe it. Like, yeah. It doesn't look like she's had that much work either. If she has had something done, it's very subtle.
She looked
beautiful.
I think it must be all of the, you know, the pampering, because they did show that she was getting some kind of face mask or something. It is really interesting you mentioned the early 2000s, because if you think back to that time, remember who the celebrities were. It was like Jessica Simpson from Newlyweds, and obviously Paris Hilton was big in Nicole Richie. And there was this sort of narrative that if you were big on the TV scene and in America, you weren't particularly smart. Like, there was a character that they put across, and that's the character that Paris spoke a lot about in the documentary.
It was the real glamorization of being dumb, I have to say, and talking in baby voices. You know, obviously
that's hard.
Obviously, Kim Kardashian used to be Paris Hilton's personal assistant. And
stylist.
Well, I read in an article they called her a personal assistant. But anyway, she adopted that baby voice in the first series of the Kardashians as well. It's really interesting to go back and look at that series and see how they it was very performative in the way they spoke and acted.
Well, I remember it came out that Jessica Simpson had an extremely high IQ, and it was also reported that she, like Paris Hilton admitted that she was doing, that she had put on this character. And it's quite interesting to look at society at that time, that that was a character that was accepted by the masses, a woman who's attractive but really quite silly.
I wonder if we had social media at the time, whether it would have been more difficult to hide the smart side of themselves or to be so inauthentic that they were being. I mean, Paris has spoken about how she did adopt this baby voice and how she actually naturally has a deep voice. Did you actually think that her voice sounded that different in the documentary?
I did when I saw the initial clip, but I just got used to it. I mean, it was just all I've previously really heard her say is that's hard, and like all the, you know, you don't really hear her talk that much on the shows. What I found interesting was the reference to how she was, I suppose, the first influencer. So she was filming herself and taking selfies long before any of the influencers that we know of now were doing any of this.
Yeah, and I suppose it wasn't really something that she seemed particularly proud of. She said that she might have created a monster. So,
well, she said she felt bad at the end of the doco. She said, I feel responsible for how society has turned.
Now, the whole crux of the documentary was that she spoke about alleged verbal abuse and torture that she experienced at a reformatory school that her parents had sent her to.
Well, the whole basis of the documentary really was the fact that the reason Paris had created this character, which was so lavish in everything she did, was because it was a big FU to the people who had abused her at this camp. And it was actually really sad because she did speak about how she didn't really feel like she had the time to even meet somebody or have children. It seemed that everything that had happened at this camp had negatively impacted her life, so much so that she didn't even know who she really was.
Well, you say negatively impacted. She's still almost close to earning $1 billion.
Yeah, but I mean,
that doesn't make you happy, obviously, but...
No, it was funny. I watched the doco with my boyfriend and at the end he's like, I still don't feel sorry for her. And I mean, but I actually did because, you know, you can have all the money in the world, but she didn't seem particularly happy. Now, Soph, I'd love to hear, what did you think of the scene where she had that fight with her boyfriend when she was DJing?
I couldn't believe him. I thought it was so unsupportive. She's there doing one of the biggest gigs of her career and he's just interested in trying to get her attention and bitch and moan at her. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah,
it was great viewing though.
It was so embarrassing. Dale and I were saying, can you imagine if you were him and you told all your friends like, oh yeah, I'm dating Paris Hilton. And then you show up for like 5 minutes in the documentary and one, she's put out cameras to spy on you because clearly she doesn't trust you. And then the next minute you're acting like a total douchebag at the festival and get kicked out.
It'd be really hard to find someone to date being Paris Hilton because, you know, the whole public have this perception of her that since we've seen from the documentary isn't true.
Yeah, she'd honestly have to date somebody that was extremely rich because you can't throw a normal person into that lifestyle and not expect them to be, you know, either feel like they're lesser than her because she does have this amazing business going on. I'm just being honest.
I was shocked by the amount of product she still was rolling out because I felt like she'd become a bit irrelevant.
I couldn't believe when she said that she was kind of going to take a bit of a chill pill after she'd earned $1 billion. I'm like, far out.
She must be dirty on the fact that Kylie Jenner apparently has already made $1 billion.
And yeah, well, that's questionable, isn't it?
Now, the next question was about Skye Wheatley's new Mummy and Me clothing line.
So she's released this clothing line and the kids' tracksuits cost $110.
Now, my initial reaction was that this was outrageously priced. And what is the point if children are going to spill things on them? But then I had a bit more of a deeper thought. Now, if an influencer is to sell alternatively clothing that is very cheap, there is someone down the line who is paying for it, whether it's through wages or unethical working conditions or even unsustainable materials.
No, but sorry, that's not true because she could be getting these clothes unethically sourced but just putting a huge price tag on it.
But that's where I beg to differ because there was a post from a local woman who did make tie-dye outfits and she said that most of the time, because it's tie-dye, you actually have to hand print it yourself. Now, I'm not suggesting that Skye Wheatley's out in her backyard doing it, but she is probably using a manufacturer to do
it. If you're doing personalized tie-dye, yes, they're all the same. That's printed.
Well, this designer seemed to think that it was being handmade. And she said that if she was to hand make it, she wouldn't be able to charge any less than $70 per item. Mm. Now, have you realized that since the backlash, Skye Wheatley has actually reduced the price? So she has brought the sets down to $80. So it's $40 for a top, $40 for pants.
Well, that's actually good that she's listened to her audience and actually decided to do that.
But then again, is it? Because I feel like you need to be confident in your brand. If you're already putting the price down, you're saying that it isn't worth it. And it makes people speculate more whether it is just cheap goods that she's producing and slapped, you know, a huge price tag on. The next question is, what is our opinion on influencers retouching their photos?
Look, I'm not surprised that influencers do it. Of course, we all know that they're doing it, but I actually do think it's a really bad thing. I think that, you know, it's okay to put filters and all of that on your photo, but some influencers go to the absolute extreme where they're making their waist smaller or, you know, they're blurring out their face and other body parts. And I just think that that's quite unethical to do it. I remember when I was working as a news reporter, it was probably about 5 years ago now, I did a story about this app where you could add abs to your body and you could make yourself skinnier. And I spoke to a psychologist and she was talking about how dangerous that is for teenagers' psyche, because even though you know somewhat. Like, people do know that these photos are being edited. Sometimes you still feel shit when you look at them.
Well, I think it's even more scary with the new Instagram filters, which, you know, make your nose skinnier and your lips bigger. And I just think it's such a terrible thing that's happening at the moment. But at the same time, I actually do feel sorry for influencers, because I feel like the scrutiny that they face online is so intense, and there is just such a pressure to be perfect at all times. You know, if you were to put up a photo that you perhaps weren't quite happy with, or had some sort of blemishes or whatever it may be, there's just so many trolls that are there to point out what your problems are.
No, but I mean, I just feel like it's this sick cycle, because, yeah, there are a lot of pressures that influencers face. And of course, no one wants to put up a photo where they've got a huge pimple. But do you know what? I feel like there are a lot of people calling out for influencers to be more real and raw. We saw it when Talia Skaines on her YouTube channel spoke about her issues with her skin, and everyone loved it. I also...
Yeah, but that being said, there's going to be some people who are sensitive and think it's great, but there's going to be other people who jump on and say, God, you're ugly. Yeah, look at your pimples.
But they're going to say that regardless of how much they've face-tuned themselves. The issue is that young women and young men are seeing these face-tuned photos, and then they're going and face-tuning their photos. And then when people see them, they're feeling shit about themselves because they don't look like their photograph.
It's so hard, because I don't know whether to blame the influencer or if it's the broader society that is to blame for this unrealistic view.
The thing I hate more than the Facetune is when some influencers post photos of themselves saying they're makeup free when they look amazing. So it's, you know, sometimes you can tell they've just had a facial and they've decided to take this stunning photo of themselves with hashtag makeup free. The reason I hate it is because people will look at it and go, oh my God, I don't look like that makeup free. By them saying they're makeup free, they're saying, oh, this is, I look bad in this photo. But it's subtly saying, also look how great I look without makeup on.
Well, that's the thing. If we actually saw some makeup free photos that were realistic, it might be better. Yeah, that's
what I mean. But some people do post realistic makeup free ones. But the ones where you can tell that it's, you know, this absolute banging photo of them and they don't actually look like that makeup free, I think that's kind of dangerous.
I just think it's such a fine line. I just feel like even for people who aren't influencers, you do feel a lot of pressure about what you post online. Like, even for me, I don't have many followers and I think, oh, this photo is not good enough. Or, you know, there's always that thing in the back of your mind, or who's gonna say something about this? Like, you know, you never feel like your photo is good enough. And it's really sad that there's that pressure on everyone when it should be a platform that's fun.
Is it sad that I don't really think that? I mean, because I don't really choose to post selfies or, I don't know, just single shots of me.
But you wouldn't just post up anything, would you? You're not just that person that's just banging out a photo.
Yeah, but that's because I don't take photos of myself all the time. So the only time that's really
why you don't feel the pressure then.
Yeah, but if you're an influencer having to post photos of yourself, yeah, I can see the pressure.
But do you think that you don't post as much because you know that your photos aren't deemed good enough to put on there because you're not doing something glamorous enough? You're not going to snap a photo of yourself sitting here doing the podcast now and whack it up because you're so confident in yourself. No.
Of course, I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying that the photos that I normally put up of when I've been out somewhere and I've actually taken a photo, I don't tend to take photos of myself all day, every day, because it would just be me sitting in my track pants and my hoodie. And no, I wouldn't choose to post that.
So, exactly.
No. But I'm saying that if I was an influencer and every day I was posting images of myself, I probably would try and post photos that were relatable. A lot of the influencers don't realize that not everyone wants to see them glammed up to the max every single photograph because it's not relatable. As I said, I haven't taken a photo of myself probably for the last 4 months because all I've done is sit around home wearing tracksuit pants.
I just know, like, just reflecting back when we worked at the news, and obviously you'd be doing piece to cameras every day, and it was... not that it was all about what you look like, but you were having to present yourself in a certain way. And I remember as soon as the feed would be put in the computer for you to watch your piece to camera back, I actually had to put my hands over my eyes and just kind of look through because I was so nervous about what I look like. And that's because that's been put to thousands of people out at nighttime. And that's how the influencers must feel when they're putting their photo out to their 1 million followers. They want to get it right.
Yeah, but it's also because they want to have a stylish Instagram feed. And people, you know, because there's all the people that have their secondary accounts as well, which are their like real life photos. I can see how you'd have to have a really aesthetically pleasing photograph. But can we just leave in the fact that that's how wide your hips are?
Oh, or, you know, I mean? Completely can we leave agree. In the fact that I don't agree with Photoshopping at all. I'm just saying that I can see why people may feel the pressure to do it, and it's really hard to know what the resolution is.
I do love when Michael Finch face tunes his photos, because he's so honest about it, and it just cracks me up. People are like, I face tuned the F out of this photo, and you're just like, yeah, and it does look like a cool photo, and everyone's aware that you've done it. So maybe that's the answer, just being more transparent about what you've done. And I feel like, you know, smoothing out skin and stuff, that's one thing, but when you're, you know, making yourself skinnier, I think that's where it gets a bit too far.
Now the next question we have is a little bit different. It's advice for year 12s who are about to undertake their exams.
Gosh, I feel so sorry for everybody that's in year 12 this year. What a strange year. Actually, in saying that, I probably would have been rapt if this had happened when we were in year 12, because I did hate being actually physically at school, not the work itself.
Oh, but it would have been great to social distance from some of the people at our school, but would have been the ultimate. But I mean, for most people who actually enjoy school, it would be terrible, because you've missed out on your formal, you've missed out on all of the fun parts of year 12, schoolies, muck up day was fun. But my advice would be to make sure you have prepped properly.
Mm.
And that's throughout the whole year. So, I mean, maybe that advice can fall on deaf ears at the moment, is redundant. But I think you've got to pace yourself. You can't just cram, you know, a few nights before and hope to pass. So I actually remember I think we had three exams. We all did the same subjects in year 12. So we had three exams in year 12, and one of them was a psychology exam. And I remember the night before just completely freaking out, even though I'd studied the whole lead up to it properly. I just freaked myself out and told myself that I didn't know anything. But I think at that point, that's when you've actually just got to go to bed, because there's a certain amount that when you actually have proper sleep, your brain goes over the things that you've learned that day. So I think you've just got to give yourself proper sleep, give yourself the time to prepare for it, and not put too much pressure on yourself.
I think it's always good as well to read stuff and then explain it to somebody, because sometimes if you're just reading a textbook and trying to memorize something, it's just, unless you've got a photographic memory, it's really hard to do. So maybe even talk to a friend who's studying for the exam and run through questions and ask each other the questions and make sure you actually know what you're talking about. You haven't just, you know, rope learned and written something down.
I think that's such a good point. I used to have this tendency to try and rope learn everything, and then you would really struggle if you forgot what the next letter in that rope learning was, and you thought, fuck, I actually don't know this.
I've got another tip. If you're doing a cheat sheet, just learn to write really tiny and cram as much on that cheat sheet as you can.
Oh my God. I remember in year 12, my hand was so sore by the end of those exams, because you'd always been using laptop, but we were in year 12 so long ago, it was actually a desktop computer that I used in my bedroom.
We had laptops.
I had a desktop in my room.
I remember having a laptop as well.
Well, I'm sure they were around, but weren't not as commonplace now. But well, good luck to all the year 12 students. Just think the hell is almost over, and then you're never going to have to be at school again.
Except then you're probably just going to have 4 years of university.
Oh, I love uni.
Yeah. Uni holidays, they're coming soon. Now, the last question we've chosen is, what are our thoughts on Shani Grimmon's latest videos?
I love them. The old Shani is back. Queen Shani is back.
And now, we've spoken in the past about Shani, and we have been quite critical of the fact that she was away from YouTube for a long time. And really, it's because we're OG Shani Grimmon fans. We were disappointed by the lack of content, but she has come back. I think she's dropped three videos in the last, 8 days. And they, I don't know, as you said, Shani is just back. She's bubbly. She's her fun self.
She seems happy.
She does seem happy. And
she seems more assured in herself. I feel like she was second guessing herself. And I suppose when you have been doing YouTube for such a long time, you probably do question what you want to do, whether you want to change up your content. And I think she's realized that vlogging is where it's at for her.
Well, I do think that if you look at it, she did seem to stop sort of being her fun, bubbly self when she did move to Melbourne, when she was involved in her relationship with Tommy Bug. And
had the friendship breakdown with Chloe as well, which would have been a sad time for anyone.
Yeah, but I just feel like she seemed really different and a bit more sad when she was in Melbourne. So maybe now it's kind of a fresh start. She's back in Brisbane. She's single again. Her housemate seems really lovely. They seem to be having a lot of fun. So I am loving the content. Now, I think that's all we've got time for, because Sophie's dog Archie is just been playing up his weed on the floor during this podcast.
He's barking. He's biting at my feet. I don't know how we've continued, but we've pushed through, haven't we?
We have pushed through.
We pushed through for the listeners.
Well, thank you so much for listening.
Oh, see, there he is again. Yeah. We've been having to try and hide this, but Archie, you just want to be heard on the podcast, don't you?
He does. He does want to be heard. Now,
he wants everyone to follow him on Instagram, I think.
Is this just a shameless plug? Archie, at Archie, the Golden Cocker.
That's right.
Anyway, if you did like this episode, we'd love if you could leave us a review, preferably 5 stars for good karma, please. And also go and join our Facebook community. It's Outspoken, the podcast community. We're having some amazing chats in there, so go hit us up there.
And also make sure you follow our Instagram. It's outspoken_the_podcast. We're doing a lot of polls at the moment, putting out a lot of questions. So if there's something you want to hear from us, hit us up and let us know.